For Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. This is it, dear listeners. We've come to the end of yet another season. And what a ride it's been. When I began this experiment last summer, I was searching for community. I was thinking a lot about the changes that I've gone through as I've spent more and more time overseas, and I was wondering if anyone else out there was going through the same things. Not only have I discovered that the questions that have been coming up for me are nearly universal among people who choose to live overseas, but there's also precious little space for us to talk about them with each other. So this podcast has not only gained a small but growing audience, but it's become a passion project that has all but overtaken everything else in my life, and it's inspired some big changes, as you'll hear in a moment. Over the last year, I've had the privilege to be able to speak with people from all around the world who are living a life of migration. Each of them has their own reason for making the journey, and each has had their own way of answering that first question that I ask each of them: where is home? But I won't be asking that question of this week's guest. To wrap up season two of the show, I'm joined once again by my amazing partner in life, Alisa Rutherford Fortunati, to talk about the incredible shifts that have taken place in our lives over the last 6 months and how our migration story is about to undergo a drastic evolution. Alisa, thanks so much for coming back onto the show with me.
You are most welcome.
Oh, it's so nice of you. Whenever you come on here, and because I know this has pretty much taken over my life, and when I'm recording and you're in the room, I'm like, don't move, be quiet, and you and you tolerate me, and I appreciate it very much. Thank you for being so supportive.
No problem. Yeah. It's funny because, you know, I was just recording something for the school. Well, we'll get to this, but the school that I'm going to be moving to next year. And it is amazing how much you can hear every little shuffle and shift and stuff.
So. It's a good microphone that we use.
Yeah.
So we are moving to Bali.
Yeah.
That's the big news. I've been in Beijing. Tropical. You're excited by this, if people don't know.
Well, I just felt that it was appropriate to sing a song.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Well, I've been in Beijing for 11 years. I've been thinking of myself as a serial monogamist when it comes to where I live. I lived in Boston for 32 years, 10 as an all-grown-up adult out of the house. And then I did Beijing for 11 years, and now we're about to do Bali, Indonesia for probably, and this is the big shift, maybe 3 years, two, maybe 3 years, probably not much more. We don't know.
We don't know. I mean, yeah. I don't think it's appropriate to put a timeline on how long we're going to be there for, because we have no idea. But what you just said actually perfectly segues into kind of where I thought I might want to lead this time and not. Okay, you can cut that.
Lead every time.
I'm kidding. Okay.
You're leading me out of here.
No. I was actually thinking about this today. What I meant by this is I knew we were going to be doing this podcast soon. And I was thinking about, okay, so for this one, what is the kind of central idea that we're focusing on? And what you just said about it's been like a monogamous relationship is perfect, because I actually had a conversation with one of my friends when I was in university about how the cities that we live in are like romantic relationships. They go through phases, and you have, you know, the kind of the initial puppy love, the infatuation, or the fear that you're going to make a mistake. And you also have the part where you start falling out of love, or things become a little tumultuous, or you're not communicating well with each other.
Or there's another woman
that's just coming into the picture. And I think that the
Beijing doesn't do menage a trois. It's Beijing or nothing.
Yeah. And I think that it's a very appropriate analogy for the way that it feels when you move to a new place and when you're preparing to leave, and the beginning of things and the ending of things. And, you know, my little impromptu song is not because I'm like, woo, I want to get out of Beijing. I love Beijing. Beijing and I have had an excellent relationship with each other. There have been tumultuous moments, but overall, it's been a really wonderful, healthy, formative relationship.
You know, you've just come to the end of the relationship. It's no one's fault.
Exactly.
It's no one's fault. You've just grown apart.
Exactly. God, if more people weren't like that. I mean, and I think it's actually really appropriate too, because you are very much a serial monogamist with your cities, and I am not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you get around.
Young man, watch yourself. But yeah, like I've most of the cities that I've lived with since I moved away from the city I grew up in, it's been about 3 to 4 years.
This is the longest place you've been in, I think, since you left your hometown, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Which shows how impactful Beijing has been. And, you know, if you listen to the last podcast where I came on as a guest, I would highly recommend doing so if you haven't. there's a moment where you hear some sniffles and me kind of being like, and, you know, Mike cut out the majority of my tears. But I think when we started the process of grieving, leaving Beijing, like any process of grief, it started with me in denial. Like I just couldn't quite deal with my relationship with Beijing ending or changing, where we weren't going to be together all the time. It was going to be long distance.
It is going to be long distance.
And we might visit every once in a while, but it just won't be the same.
There's a whole alimony thing too, which we could maybe get into later, but there's some complex financial stuff that you have to do to disentangle yourself from Beijing.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. So for me, I think it really did start with a process of deep grief and denial. And I, over the last year, have come to a place, or the last 9 months, what have you, I've come to a place of acceptance, and I feel okay about leaving. But that doesn't mean that I'm like, I don't want to be in Beijing, and Beijing is this horrible place. I've never felt that way, and I don't think I will ever feel that way. I feel deep gratitude for China as hosting me, for the chance to be able to live here for the past 4+ years, and you and I have our marriage book from here. We got married here, and they're actually not going to be letting two foreigners get married here anymore. So, like, there's things that have changed while we're here that could never be created again. If we came next year, we wouldn't have been able to get married here.
We came after, I think, September, October of last year, we wouldn't be able to get married. Oh, no, I'm sorry. May of this year, we wouldn't be able to get married. I love it. I love the fact that our marriage, our Chinese marriage licenses are now collector's items. I legit want to get them framed. We have two, one for me, one for you. And I think of one, because I'm a comic book guy and I used to collect comic books. I think of one.
Nerd.
Yeah.
I love you.
Thank you. I think of one as being the one that we open and show people, but the other is the one we keep in plastic and don't open. Kind of like you buy 2 issues of the comic. It's there's been a lot of changes, and that's kind of the trope with expats in Beijing, especially if you've been here more than 5 or 6 years. Everyone's like, oh my God, the changes. And I've talked about it with some Beijing expats who are here, but it seems like the pace of change, not just in the city, but in the way that the city and the country relates to foreigners who live here. Mm. In the last year, it's really changed. And you've gone through it, you know, with your visa process to get your job, regulations changed halfway through. Now that we're trying to disentangle ourselves, there's increased scrutiny on financial transactions. If I want to take money, you know, if we want to get our money out of here, because I've worked here for 11 years, you've worked here for, you know, 3.5 with a job, and we have some money and we want to get it out of here. We've been saving so that we can move, and getting it out is complex. And there's just a lot of stuff that goes on. And the thing with me is I'm not nervous about going to a new place. It's kind of interesting. When I moved to Beijing, I was excited. I wasn't nervous, but I was excited. And when I got to Beijing, I was so scared. It's actually funny. We met with someone today. Earlier today, who came to our apartment, and they were buying some of our stuff. And this person has just moved to China and doesn't know how to navigate the system. And it's just inexperience, right? But it is very nerve-wracking to them. And you can tell that they're kind of, I don't want to say they're freaking out, but like it's just below the surface. You can tell they're like, what, how is this going to work out? And I don't know it. I don't, how do I get from here to there? And how do I do this? And what about this roadblock? And I saw, and I thought to myself, that was me. Cause when I got here, after I'd been here, after the Olympics, when the Olympics were over and I had to live real life, it was scary. I look back and I remember being so scared. I remember not being able to know what to buy in the supermarket.
You were sending me a lot of emails at that time.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was scared. I wanted to talk to you every day because I didn't have anyone to talk to. And and I saw that in her. But I know when we go to Bali, I won't feel that way because I know how to do this now. The rules will be different.
Yeah.
The environment is different. The community will be different. But I know it's can't be any worse than here, first of all. But also, I just know how to figure stuff out.
I think you know, the term worse than here. I think it's important that we clarify. We don't mean that this is a bad experience, that things work differently.
Level of difficulty.
And so as you transition from one place to another, how you navigate the complexity of bureaucratic processes and things like that, that is what Mike means when he says worse than here is. You know, like we went to the bank yesterday, and because they had written my name incorrectly, I believe.
When their system cannot accommodate the hyphen in your name.
Yeah, their system couldn't accommodate the hyphen in my name.
And it's 22 characters long.
Yeah, it's very long. And so we ended up spending about 2 hours there getting it fixed. And somebody who hasn't lived here would be like, oh my gosh. Or maybe they think, bureaucracy is that way all over the place. You know, it depends on the individual. But I think for both Mike and I,
if you're new here, that's going to freak you out. Like, I'm just trying to get a new car. Right. Why is this taking 2.5 hours?
And for Mike and I, we're like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like we just put on our podcast. We hang out. Like the person knows that, you know, we're not being disrespectful. We're just sitting back in our seat and like listening to music. And then they'll wave at us when they need us to sign the next 10 papers. And then it's another half an hour. And then they wave at us again and we sign another 10 papers. And
this is literally how, this is not an exaggeration. This is actually what happens.
And then things get stamped and then they get stamped again. And then you call this person over. And it, and I think that there's part of me that loves this shit. Loves it.
There's a perverse feeling of accomplishment at the end of that. When you have a China day, as we like to say, when you get to the end of that and you have actually accomplished your mission, no matter what it is, there is a feeling of, man, I conquered that hill.
In the back of your head, like Eye of the Tiger starts playing.
That's
dun,
right.
Dun, 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 dun.
That's right. Yeah. Look what I did. Like that stamped piece of paper is not just a piece of paper. It's your fucking trophy. Like, look what I did.
Yeah, exactly. And also, too, that I think it's really interesting. If somebody came to the United States and they were trying to deal with a bureaucracy there, they could get extremely frustrated. There's all kinds of complicated things with, you know, I know somebody that just got denied a visa to the United States. And it was for like this simple, it was just the silliest thing. So I think that every country has their areas where it's just like, oh my gosh, what is this? Why is it like this? But if you step back and you're just like, this is interesting, then you can just relax and go with the flow of, you know, maybe it's going to take 2 hours to fix something, or maybe you're going to have to go to 5 different banks, or, you know, who knows? And in Indonesia, I'm sure there's going to be multiple levels of figuring out what the flow of things is there. And if you go with the flow, while it may sound cliche, really, it just makes your life better. And I have a lot of friends here that don't really like Beijing. Not, you know, I wouldn't say it's the majority of my friends, but I'd say that there's a
There is a subset of the expat population in Beijing and probably in many cities in China. I'm not going to say it's always the teachers.
But I do think it's a big chunk of teachers.
There are plenty of people who are here for the money and they're not really interested and they don't like it and they're frustrated. Why can't I just have things the way I want? Which is kind of the way I am. But I'm also like totally fine with having to navigate whatever.
And I have mixed feelings about that because as international migrants, I understand sometimes working within your own home country is not financially feasible, and teaching internationally allows you to really actually prepare for retirement and to have interesting experiences and meet interesting people. But I do find it really fascinating that there's this group of expats who are just like, no, they only tend to focus on the negative of the place and don't really have this grand desire, and they're there for work. And that's, you know, I guess that's all right. But I do think that if you can find your way to open to a place, that place opens to you.
It's an interesting dynamic because as I've talked about with some people on the show, China and especially Beijing is not a place you fall into accidentally.
Yeah.
You make an affirmative choice to be here. No one is flying around and they hit Beijing and they're like, oh, I think I'm just going to stay here and teach now. Like if you're looking for a teaching job, I'm talking about the people who are looking for work.
Okay.
These are affirmative choices you make. So it's an interesting dynamic when you've made an affirmative choice to go somewhere and you get there. And I have to say a lot of people who come here in that cohort are of the mind, I don't want to be here anyway. Like they're like, I don't want to come here.
Which I think is really odd.
You know, I guess we can't be in people's shoes, but
it's not so much everybody feels the way that they feel. And again, some of these people are my friends. So it's not to be all judgmental about it. But the concept of being somewhere, I guess, again, if it's a financial thing.
But if you got the agency to choose to come here,
yeah,
go somewhere that you would like. You know what I mean? It's just weird. But, you know.
I guess maybe they didn't know before they came here that it wasn't going to be the right city for them.
Yeah, there's that possibility.
And again, if we go back to the relationship analogy, sometimes.
One night stand.
Sometimes you get into a relationship with somebody and you know it's not going to work out, but you still are like, well,
they buy me nice things.
Yeah, I'll just like hang out with them for a few years and then I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
I'll meet someone else.
You know, you mentioned retirement, and this is a theme that has come up on the show before with some people, and it's probably because what we've been going through bleeds through to the show. So
sure.
We have just now, in the last handful of months, as we've known we're gonna be moving, started to be able to think about our future. And yes, retirement is one aspect of your future, but that's way down the road. And, you know, we've been able to just start maybe setting a little money aside, and we're getting a late start, but we're doing it. But the biggest thing I think about is, again, what I talked about at the very beginning, is this new type of living overseas that we might be getting ourselves into here. You know, when I came to Beijing, my idea to come to Beijing was very much, I'm just moving to China and I have no idea what I'm doing and I have no idea whether I might be leaving. I didn't even think that way. I legit thought I'm just going over there now. And there was no idea of how long I would be there, but I thought it would be just forever possibly. I had no idea. But now that you're kind of on this career path, you know, you might go to Bali and we might go to Bali and you might love it at their school, and I might, you know, my migration media might blossom and it's a great hub for entrepreneurs and digital nomads, and it's a great place where, you know, something like migration media can blossom. We might stay there for 20 years, but I have a feeling that we're going to be on this new expat teacher subculture, international school teacher subculture, where you do 3-4 years maybe in a place and then you bounce to the next one. And it's a completely different way of living overseas. And I don't even know how to think about that. Like, I don't even know what it's going to be like.
I guess I'm not so worried about that.
Well, you've done it before.
Yeah, because I...
What's it like to have multiple places that you go to? I don't know.
I think it's that sense of following the path and recognizing what the next step for your growth is. And that can be in relationships as well as cities, you know, that if we're talking about it in relationship to where you live, there's a certain point at which sometimes where you are is not serving your needs any longer. And it's time for you, for your career development, for your personal development, whatever it means, for you to move on to a new place. And I feel like our move to Bali is very much of that ilk, that both of us were kind of at a place where it was like, I think it's time to go to another place for our lives and our jobs. And again, leaving wasn't the sense of, oh, I want to get out of that place. It was just like, oh, I think it's time to go to the next place. And so it doesn't have to be a tumultuous thing. It can just be, all right, this is what's right. And it doesn't mean you don't go through that grieving process, which I've definitely gone through. But that you're conscious of it. You're conscious that you're making that choice, and thus it makes it easier. And so I can't say, oh yes, maybe we'll be here and for 3 years. I'm not going into this situation assuming a certain time frame. I would like to be there for at least 2+ years. We'll see. But any place I go to, I'm not going there with the concept. I'm not very mercenary.
What are you most looking forward to going to Bali?
Gardening.
Oh.
Gardening, you know.
The school you're going to, I remember we visited it. Yeah. We just, so let me just actually back up and just tell the story. So we didn't actually have a plan to go to Bali, but we went there for Chinese New Year break. And before we went, I thought, hey, my wife's looking for a job at schools. I wonder if there are schools in Bali. So I looked up a list of schools. I sent you the list and you clicked on the first one and you were like, that looks like a school I want to go to. So you sent them a message. They were happy to meet you. They had a position open and we went there. And I remember there were gardens in the school, mm-hmm. like in between the school mm-hmm. buildings, which is very cool. And I was like, oh, she's really going to love it here.
Yeah. I have lived many lives within my 34 years, and some of those lives have involved being a gardener. And I think that there are people in Beijing who live outside the city and garden, or they have just like little...
It's kind of a new thing here,
little
actually.
Gardens within their houses or, you know, little things like that. But I haven't necessarily gotten into that world here. And I'm very interested in mindfulness and education and the nexus of where academia and social and emotional learning meet. And so for me, in my career path, that was really important that I continue to explore that. At some point, I'm contemplating my doctorate. I don't know if that'll happen anytime soon or if that's going to be the end road. But as of right now, that's something I'm thinking a lot about, is how we're preparing our students for the future. And are we doing so in a holistic and grounded way? Because naturally, I strongly believe in the importance of academia, but I also believe in the importance of preparing students to face the world of tomorrow. And to do so in a way that comes from a firm core and comes from a place where they are consciously making choices instead of just out of habit. So for me, going to Bali was about the communities there, the schools that are really holistic. And there's lots of different schools like that all over the world, but this felt like the right next step.
It's a great location too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been...
Honestly, like, I'm excited, but I'm also... I'm not super concerned about the... I mean, I'm happy to be there, and I'm happy that we're going to be in Bali, and I think it's going to be amazing. But I think a lot of people would assume that we were moving there because we want to be, like, close to the beach, and that's lovely. I'm excited.
I'm actually not a beach person.
I like the beach.
I like a pool with a shade.
I know you do. You know, but it was about the next step. We had talked, you know, when I came to China, it was because I was coming here to be with you. And we're saying, let's see if it works. That's great. If it does, and we can be together. And, you know, 4+ years later, da 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 da. We have succeeded.
We got the souvenir licenses to prove it.
Yeah. But also, one thing we had talked about and you'd said is like, the next place you want to go to, like, or we want to go, like,
it's on you.
You go for it.
You came here for us. Next one is all you. I'll go wherever you want.
Because I had to take a big pay cut.
Yeah.
To move to Bali.
Bali's cheaper, but you're getting a commiserate pay cut as well.
Yeah, it's a very intense pay cut. And I don't feel later in our life, if we're talking about retiring, I don't think we would necessarily be able to fiscally be able to do that. So to be able to financially do that. So I think that this was kind of the time, and it also just felt right. And I don't think we need to get into every little detail of it, but let's just say we've had so many confirmations in the way things have fallen into the place.
It's very similar to what happened just before and just after I moved to China.
Yeah.
Like, it's just you just get all of these affirmations in your life. Things happen, you meet certain people, certain opportunities. I mean, the way I found my job, the friend group I fell in with, mm-hmm. and the connections I made, mm-hmm. that really enriched my life and helped me discover who I was. And, you know, the apartment I moved into, the second apartment I moved into, that, you know, so many stories that I could go through that just affirm to you, okay, you're in the right place for you right now. It may not be forever, but this is the right, you've taken the right step.
Yes.
And we're getting a lot of feedback in that vein, mm-hmm. about going to Bali.
Yeah.
So I think it's made it a lot easier for us to think about going there. I know it has for me. I'm not worried about anything. I mean, I
think the only clarification that we should make is that both of us do take into account how things are happening and if it feels in line with what we're supposed to be doing.
We could get there and the island could literally blow up. I mean, there's a volcano. There's several.
But we do so actively.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that we're like, when things get hard, we're not like, oh, we shouldn't be doing that then. I think that when you're on your path, it doesn't mean that you don't have to actively choose that path, just as you have to actively choose a person if you want to be with them. You know, love is an action word. It is a verb. And while as much as if it's a noun, I think it is very much an action word. And when we talk about like feeling like things were in line, we have made conscious choices. But those conscious choices and the way they have led to things and the way the next step has been presented, which we had to choose to take that next step, has just been so evident that this is the right path right now.
Yeah. We'll see when we get there. And
yeah,
I'm excited. So let's talk a little bit about the transition. So this is something that I haven't gone through before, except if you count my moving from the US to China. We are trying to offload all of our stuff. Like, there's a whole, we never gathered too many things, but one of the things that you have to do when you live overseas, especially if you have this idea that you might be jumping around from place to place, who knows if that'll happen, but that's probably what the path we're on. But you can't be carrying around a lot of stuff, because every time you move, you got to ship things. You got to go through customs through two different countries. You got to worry about how much luggage you can carry. I mean, it's expensive. One of the things, we've been able to save up some money. We're going to be spending a big chunk of it just getting to where we're going. Like, it's a fantastic privilege and opportunity we have. But it also, like you said, it's an active thing. Like, you got to really work at it and want to do it. So I know how I feel. I could go on for a while. But how do you feel about this transition? So you know, we've been in the last week, really, it started to ramp up in terms of us really having to pare down what we have, make a decision on a moving company, start selling our things, start, you know, just doing the stuff of moving. How has that been making you feel about the transition itself, whether it's about regretting it or looking forward to it or just hating the process?
Well, I am lucky enough to have what Mike and I kindly refer to as a Hausfrau. Which means, like, Mike has been doing a lot of things. He's been the housemaiden.
I'm no longer employed. That's one of my transitions, and I've left my job that I had for 10 and a half years. So now I can focus full time on building Migration Media and also trying to organize our move. By the way, moving from China, if anyone's thinking about doing this, moving from China is a full-time job. So make sure that before you move, you quit your job.
I think it goes back and forth. There's moments where I'm like, I feel like one of my first graders, where I'm like, I don't want to do this. No, make me do this. Why do I have to do this? And I feel like moving is just too, like, properly moving with, like, having to get a moving company and properly sell everything and things like that just feels like too freaking adult for me. And then there's other moments where it's just like, okay, this is where we're at. And, you know, and I think it was a really interesting process as a couple too, because there are a lot of things that I felt you were more sentimental about. And there was a lot of things that I think you felt I wasn't fully thinking about whether we would need them or not. And we had to kind of come to this place of understanding of what taking our
what
moving our lives meant. And for some people, they might be like, well, moving is moving, but it's not. Different people, just as different people have different concepts of home, different people have different concepts of what moving to a new place looks like.
I mean, you could be moving across town, but moving by yourself is one thing.
Yeah.
But then moving as part of a couple is different.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. And so I'd say, you know, it's been up and down and all around, and
we're still married.
Yeah. For now. I'm kidding. Yeah, I think that we've had some moments where we were just like, this is so frustrating. But at the end of the day, we were really able to come to an understanding of what this process meant for each of us. And both of us were able to be compassionate about what that meant. So maybe it meant that we got rid of some things that maybe you would have taken with us. And for me, it meant that we ended up going with a moving company so that we could bring more things with us. And it was a process. And I think it was really good, because I think now we know what it looks like. We know how obnoxious the process is and how long it takes and how much energy it takes. And so I think we'll be better prepared for the next journey, whenever that is.
This is, going through this process has just reaffirmed for me the barriers that exist for people who are international migrants. If you live overseas, if you live in Massachusetts and you want to move to Seattle or vice versa, like you did, it's not complicated. You know, you're moving 3,000 miles and you're moving to a place with a different kind of culture, different lingua franca, well, not lingua franca, but different dialect, maybe, different way of getting around, different environment. You know, that's a big transition. But you also have no barriers between those places. I mean, that's what a country is, right?
Right.
But if you're moving from country to country, there are all these barriers.
Oh my gosh.
And you're just like, why? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. It's literally barriers for the sake of barriers. Some of the things you're like, okay, we can't bring in fruits and vegetables and live animals. Like, that makes sense, you know?
Right.
But things like, my God, really? You gotta check the wood carving that I picked up in a hutong, you know? You gotta document every article of what I've got, and it's just...
And again, I think that's actually a really good example of something that we had not previously thought about. Like, we have this wood carving and painting that Mike has had for 9-10 years. And it just looks like an old folk art piece, not anything of particularly...
It's lovely.
It's beautiful and it has great value to us, but we never had thought of it having any more value than that. And when the movers came in and they saw that, they said, we've got to get that checked out to make sure it's not an antiquity, because obviously you can't bring that outside the country. And both Mike and I were like, oh, wow, yeah, of course, because we would never want to bring something that was a precious artifact outside the country that it originated from. That's not We're not going to do that. But we hadn't even thought that this could be a possibility. So that's one of the things that the movie company is doing for us, is having it checked out to make sure we wouldn't even know how to negotiate that, even if we,
you have to hire someone. It's basically a tax. I'm not saying that in a bad way. It's not pejorative. It is a cost of doing business. If you want to move from here to someplace else that's outside China, there are certain things you have to do and they cost money. It's a tax. Whereas when you moved from Seattle to Boston, there's no tax. It's just a cost of gas because you drove. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, and too, like, I think that if we had had a pet.
That's a whole other.
Yeah, that would have been a whole other process.
It's why we never got pets.
Yeah, it's actually a big part of the reason, though. I'm pretty sure we're going to get one in the next couple of years. But, you know, it is like every piece that you add to your life, whether it's a painting you picked up in the Hutongs or the winter clothes you bought because it's really cold here during winter.
Our winter clothes.
It affects the choices you have to make.
Those actually have a cost associated with them.
Yeah.
Number one, we got to bring them back as checked baggage, which is technically free, but it limits what else we can bring back to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to store them because we may move somewhere cold again.
Yeah.
And if we don't store them, which will cost money, we'll have to buy a whole new winter wardrobe, which will cost money. So you're kind of doing math. You're saying, can we store these for not long enough where it costs more than it would cost to replace them all?
Right. And I don't want to just get rid of everything. So, I mean, we're selling some things. We're donating other things. We're shipping some things. It's been a really big process. And it's been an adventure.
It's funny because we come from we're so privileged to be able to do this.
Yeah.
And to make the affirmative decision to go to a place and to have the option.
Mm-hmm.
But just because we're privileged doesn't mean it isn't a challenge.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean the challenge. It's like a tiny, I call it the echo of what other, you know, what people in other social and economic strata feel. Like if you're a migrant walking from Central America through Mexico, the United States, you don't have the privilege of choosing to go there and just paying a moving company. There are all these taxes, quote unquote taxes, whether you're paying smugglers, whether you're, you know, having to walk all that way, it's a physical tax, whether you can't bring your family and you got to separate yourselves. And I mean,
you could almost refer to it by the economic term of opportunity cost.
Oh, opportunity cost, right.
Yeah.
Of course. So, you know, there is a tax assessed on you no matter what social strata or economic strata you're in. Whether you're walking from place to place or you're able to choose to hire a moving company to handle most of the things for you. The logistics behind the scenes, at least.
There's a cost. I think it just depends. Our cost is financial,
yeah,
but it's not.
No, it's
our
nothing.
Livelihood,
no,
our life,
no,
our well-being.
I'm not comparing in terms of quantitative. I'm
just to clarify that.
Yeah. No. What I'm saying is, we have just the slightest echo or shadow of what they have. It's basically just to say there is always this cost associated with moving from one country to another, no matter what stratus, economic level you're at. So we talked about what we're most looking forward to when we go to Bali. What are we regretting, or what are we most sad to leave behind? I'll let you go first.
I think there's people here that I'm sad to leave behind. The food.
I was just gonna say, if she doesn't say the food, I'm jumping in with the food.
I mean, it to some people, it might sound silly, but if you haven't had proper Chinese food in China.
In Beijing,
like Xinjiang, Sichuan, Yunnan, Hunan. If you haven't had all of these incredible types of Chinese food made properly, then you haven't had real Chinese food and you just don't understand, man. The food here is amazing. It is incredible. And so that's going to be part of what will be sad to leave. But, you know, I think the world is an intense and sometimes challenging place. But there's also a lot of beauty and a lot of magic. And Beijing is one of those places where things change incredibly fast. And there's always all these possibilities. That's why people are drawn here. From inside of China and from outside of China, it is a nexus of the world. There's these certain spots that so much is happening and so much is changing. And
it's pretty addictive. It's pretty seductive to live in a place that is one of the centers of
it's amazing, yeah.
And the people that are here, the important events that happen here, literally down the street from where we live.
And there's also, I mean, yeah, sometimes the air isn't great, but there's also tons of beautiful historic parks and places. And, you know, we went to Fragrant Hills recently and to the Beijing Botanical Gardens, and they were wonderful.
They're amazing.
They were so beautiful.
They're bigger than some cities in America, just those grounds.
So I think, again, like, there's some great art museums here. There's all kinds of interesting communities. And it's hard to, like, say, this is my list of things that I'm going to miss. But, yeah, I actually don't tend to miss people or places all that much. I mean, I do to a certain extent, but I also try to focus on the people and the places that I'm at and be present in those places and, you know, think about the people I care about, their places I care about, but not wish myself there. So I don't know if it will be so much missing as knowing that there are some things and some people that won't be as close. And there will be moments that will be a bit sad. But at the end of the day, those people that we're meant to see again, we will see again. And we'll probably end up stopping through Beijing on our way to the States or something just to eat amazing food.
And there's no good flights. You got to stop somewhere.
Bali is not the easiest place to get back to the States from. So
I'm going to miss this stage of my life. I mean, when I came here,
you were just a baby.
A 32-year-old baby.
But well, you were still a baby.
I was. No, this is the place where I woke up. I mean, after I moved here, I think I've talked a little bit about this on the show before in previous episodes, but when I first got here, I realized I'd been asleep for 20 years, for 10 years.
Yeah.
And basically since I finished college and moved out of the house and until I moved here, I was kind of stuck in this repetitive cycle of not progressing in my life professionally, not progressing emotionally, socially, whatever. And it was fine. I was comfortable. I had, you know, I was lucky in that I had the resources and a job and all this stuff. But then I got here and my life just changed completely. And I, you know, I've said this, I don't feel like I needed to come to China to found myself. But I didn't know I'd found myself till I got here because everything is stripped away from you. Mm-hmm. All of the preconceived notions that surround you when you walk around your life and your home context, your home country, whatever, those just go away because no one has them anymore. So all of a sudden you realize it's almost like a protective armor where people have certain expectations for you, whether those are good or bad. It allows you to not have to work hard to prove yourself or have people get to know you. You can kind of depend on that. But here, you got to be super affirmative. You got to flex some muscles that you maybe didn't flex in your home country. And I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about community, what community is. I mean, when you're stripped of your community and you got to figure out how to make one or become part of one, you start to learn what it means. And I learned what it means here. And I learned how to do some community organizing. I learned what it means to be a professional in my field. I learned a craft. I found love here. Or I should say love blossomed here. I found love before I left, tragically. But then wonderfully, magically, it came here, which is amazing. And I learned what it was like to, you know, be a real goodness to gracious grown-up with a job and saving for a goal and a partner and having to buy things and invest in stuff and, you know, all that stuff.
All that adulting.
But, you know, it's kind of a joy to learn it when you're doing it with someone. And
yeah.
And this is not that we won't learn stuff while when we move to our new place, but Beijing for me represents a period of my life, a phase of my life that is ending. And it's wonderful. I don't want to stick around in it. I'm glad to move on, but it's been an awesome time. I mean, it's just awesome. I've never regretted living here. I've never hated living here. Never one day did I wake up thinking, God damn it, I need to get out of here. Never once. Mm-hmm. Never once.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to, and I got to say, a lot of people don't leave China being able to say that.
Yeah.
So I've been incredibly lucky in so many ways. And I'm going to miss that. I don't know if I'll find it in our next place. I may love it to death. I may hate it. It may be that girl that you see walking down the street and you're like, I'm going to go talk to her. And you go talk to her and you find out that she's an idiot. and hates food that you love and, you know, things like that. But who knows? I'm open to it. But I am going to miss this phase of my life.
You know, one of the terms you used, I would like to, I guess, challenge you on a little bit. You said it was like having those things stripped away from you. And I think that gives away too much of your power because you made a choice to let them go. From my perspective, I don't feel that you were inactive in that process. You had certain aspects of yourself that when you got here, you realized didn't work and you set them down. Some people move to a new place and they don't set down the things that don't work for them. You consciously made the choice, and I think you should own that, to set the things that were no longer serving you down.
Well, yeah, you have to.
But you don't. People, I mean, you. If you want to live happily and continue to grow as an individual, yeah, that you have to. But a lot of people don't. They wrap their little blanket of what they're comfortable with around themselves, and they use it as a shield.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
yeah, and you chose not to. You chose to let your walls go down and say, what is here for me?
You know, I'll tell you something I don't think we've ever talked about before. Part of the reason I think I was able to do that is because I met you just before I moved here. Meeting you forced me to let down some walls just to tell you that I loved you. And being able to do that, I think it was within me, you know?
You were ready for it.
I was ready for it, but that was kind of the first time I had to do it. It was before I moved here.
Yeah.
And so when I moved here, maybe I kind of subconsciously was like, oh, I did it for that person. I can do it for all these people.
And again, that was a choice you made.
Yeah.
I feel honored to be part of your journey from when you were in Boston, but I just hope that you own that you made these choices. You made the choice to come here. You made the choice to let your walls go down. You made the choice to become an active community member, a bridge builder, to start your own company, to make this network, and to continue to actively choose to reach outside of your comfort zone so that you could grow and continue to develop into the person that you are now. And I trust. You say, I don't know what's going to happen. Who knows? But if you're able to actively make those choices as you have been, then who knows? And that's amazing.
You know? I'm just glad we get to do it together.
Absolutely. I'm stoked, man.
Yeah.
You know, different people who have met me at different points in my life have different concepts of who I am. And none of them are inaccurate. They're just all different pieces of me and different parts of who I've become over the years. And now I've got a partner and we're walking this journey together and we're actively making our choices. And
yeah, man.
Building this path. And
let's do it. Bali, here we come.
High five. Meep.
All right, there you go. Well, thanks for coming on and doing this. It was fun to talk about it, and I'm excited for our next step.
Here, I'll play this. Do, 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 do.
There is music. You don't need to do this. All right. Thanks, baby. I love you.
I love you too.
Well, that's a wrap, folks. Season 2 is in the can. I'm incredibly thankful to everyone who's tuned in. Being able to share these conversations with so many fellow expats and migrants, and to hear people thank me for talking about issues they didn't even know they needed to talk about, has been unbelievably rewarding. I'm 100% committed to continuing this journey, and I'll be back in mid-September with Season 3, which I'm already hard at work on. And when I come back, I won't be alone. I'm working with some incredibly talented people to add a new slate of shows to the Migration Media roster, so keep your subscription active and you'll get all the details as soon as they're ready to drop. Until then, thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you in September.